I think the way I got good was there was a string of time where I went every day for about 3 months straight. And the progression you make in that time is just unbelievable. That was the key, I think, moment where I started to realize, you know, shape and size and design has a lot to do with, you know, the surfer. I find that these two boards are just super amazing. They're my favorite. Just worked like magic. And it just progressed my surf. If you're in the beginner to, you know, mid-intermediate, the most important thing is getting on more waves.
Well, welcome to the Basis Surf Podcast. We got Tommy Surfs, the surfboard reviewer that I will say surfs the best in small average waves. And I think that's probably one of the things that's so inspiring, because you're surfing, you know, your 2 to 3 foot, you know, California beach break waves, except you're surfing them extremely well. So it's like really inspiring, because not everybody gets to surf perfect points. And, you know, there's lots of surfboard reviewers that, you know, get to surf pretty nice waves, but it's so interesting to see how these boards perform and you know, in these more average conditions. And especially someone like you, Tommy, I mean, you're super relatable as well. Well, in some ways, right? You're surfing, you're in your 50s and you're still ripping. So it's super inspiring and relatable at the same time, because just looking at the ways you surf. So I'm very excited to have you. Thanks for joining, man.
Yeah, glad to be here. Thanks for asking me on. It's kind of an interesting journey to get to this point, but yeah, I'm having a lot of fun, and hopefully surfing keeps, you know, progressing, right? That's kind of the ultimate goal for every surfer. So
cool. Well, why don't we start kind of from the beginning? You know, how did you get into surfing? What were some of your early memories from it? And yeah, why don't we start there?
All right, cool. Yeah, I think it's just pure luck. You know, it's just kind of the friends you pick, right? So I just got in, you know, this clique of friends that decided that they were all going to take up surfing. So we found ourselves, I think I was probably in junior high. So we ended up getting on buses with, you know, old used boards that we had bought. And then we'd end up at the beach. And so for at least two to four years, that's all we did, was get on a bus every weekend, 5 in the morning, get out there, surf, and somehow had to make our way back. And I remember times when we were sitting there having to beg for money just to get back on the bus and get home.
Oh, so, wow.
Yeah, it was pretty interesting.
And where was this? Were you in California or in SoCal?
Yeah, I was in California. The place I surfed back then was a place called Seal Beach. I think that's pretty much where everyone learns, back then at least.
Yeah. And did you basically teach yourself?
The very first board I had, I bought from a friend. I'm not sure how this kid bought it, but I paid $80. It was a Burke surfboard. And I can't remember how tall it was, but I remember it being a quad and a swallowtail. And just went out and, you know, just paddle. I had no idea what to do. So I'm a visual learner. So mostly I tend to look at, you know, other people and then try to figure out from there. And so, yeah, just started doing it. And I think I stood up on my first day, which was nice, but it was a very small board. So it was pretty difficult. And the learning curve was pretty bad, because back then, you know, we didn't have wave storms and boards like that to help us out.
Yeah. So you're just like, you know, you didn't have a dad to teach you. You're taking the bus. So you're super committed. You and your buddies are just like, have no clue what's going on. You're just like watching other people and figuring it all out as you went along. And so what kind of, how did it go from there? I mean, did you just get obsessed with it? Would you describe yourself as having been, you know, gotten really good? Were you competing? Like, where did you go from there?
Yeah, I think, how old was I? So junior high, I can't remember, like 12, right? 12 to 14, somewhere around there. And I'm not a very adventurous person. And so if it weren't for my friends, I could almost guarantee I would probably not have continued, right? But it's just, luckily I had some good friends, and they'd call me up and they'd pretty much come by my house to pick me up so we could walk to the bus stop. And so, and then on top of that, I didn't have a wetsuit. So one of my really good friends was kind enough to always lend me his old suits. And if it weren't for him, I probably wouldn't even have ever surfed, you know? And so basically got in that way. But, you know, ultimately, I think the way I got good was, this is probably key for any beginner surfer, is it's hard to be a weekend warrior, right? And I remember in the very beginning, for at least a good year, everything you learned on one weekend, you know, and I didn't have the muscle memory or the brain capacity to retain the information. So I'd lose it all by the next weekend. And it was always like starting over is what it felt like, or once a month or however often we went. But I think there was a string of time where I went every day for about 3 months straight. And the progression you make in that time is just unbelievable. So, you know, ultimately, it's just about getting out there as often as possible, right? And just working on that muscle memory. And I think the great thing about today, too, is, you know, you got the wave storms that get you on more waves. And then you got the surf skates that allow you to kind of the repetition and muscle memory.
So you're a big advocate of surf skates and to improve your surfing?
I'm kind of 50-50 on it. I believe that it's great for building muscle, you know, getting the leg strength. I truly believe that if you're a surfer already, it translates really well into surf skating, right? So if you've surfed a while and you want to like build more muscle memory, good muscle memory, you can apply that. But I find that the other way, so like if you're not a surfer at all, and you go from surf skate to surfing, it doesn't translate as easily because then your weight distribution plays a factor, rail plays a factor. There's a lot of things that don't come into play with surf skating that does, you know, with surfing. And so I don't believe, and in fact, in your interview with Noel, right, it's, you mentioned it, in fact, you could potentially build bad muscle memory and apply it to surfing. So it's kind of 50-50. Yeah. You know, I think it's a good tool, but you have to be careful with it.
Yeah, I think I'd agree with that. I've experimented with it a little bit. I think there are things that you can definitely learn from a surf skate, but it's still pretty different from surfing in a lot of ways, you know. But they're, you know, just getting used to that heel to toe weight, you know, shift and things like that. I think it can be really helpful. So then do you remember any plateaus that you hit? I mean, I realize that you started surfing when you were really young, but like as you were, you know, learning and developing, kind of what did your progression look like?
I think I had a really good first few years. And I almost felt like when I got to about 18, I was pretty decent. And I don't think I was too much farther from where I am now. I think I'm just more consistent now. The plateaus come, you know, with just college, right? Or first job or having children, getting married, that kind of stuff. And where you just take these long breaks. And sometimes they help you and sometimes they hurt you. The one thing I remember, though, is when I was, I think I was about 18 years old, I entered my first surf competition and was so nervous that literally I fell on the pop-up on every wave. Yeah. And so from that point on, I said, I'm never competing again. And I just kind of shelved that. And so that was probably a bad thing for me. And that's where a lot of my plateauing happened, because then I wasn't really focused on it. You know, I wasn't experimenting with boards. And that's, you know, I think a huge advantage with the internet today is that you can learn so much. Back then, you know, whatever information you wanted to get, you either had to have some type of relationship with a shaper or a surfer, a good surfer.
Yeah.
Or you just had to do a lot of reading and, you know, but reading, I think there's, what's the word? There's so much like artistic interpretation of people trying to translate something that, you know, and surfing is so subjective. It works for them, doesn't work for you. It was really difficult. So I didn't know anything about boards. I didn't know anything about, I just went to the beach, put on my wetsuit and just surfed. That's all I ever thought about. Never even broke down how a turn worked or nothing. And it was a long progression.
Right. And figuring out even how to do a proper turn. I mean, when you're at that age, you probably couldn't even really articulate what the heck was going on. Right. You're just like, I just watch that guy and I just do that. And then that's, you finally figured it out. That's kind of how it worked, right?
Yeah. And I remember one thing that happened was maybe my second year in, I remember doing this bottom turn. And at that moment, I wasn't even thinking. I did this backside bottom turn to a straight vert off the lip, landed it. And then every one of my friends that had seen it, like they were blown away, right? They're thinking that was like a advanced level maneuver. And I was just a beginner. And then it didn't happen again for another 2 years. So it was just like these weird, like, you know, consistency problems that I always had. So, and I don't know what caused that. And looking back, I think it was probably mostly my equipment, right? Because you're on the wrong board. Foot placement was so important. And my equipment was always dictated by either my friends or just availability. And we didn't have much back then. Right.
Yeah, I mean, you were probably just riding like high performance shortboards. That's probably all you had really available to you back then.
Yeah,
right?
This was back in the '80s. So high performance shortboards then were probably considered, you know, really grovelly boards now, right? But
Oh, right.
turned down rails, like it just a lot of attributes, you know, they're so refined now. But back then I felt like they were, I guess, clunky. They had beak noses. They were probably too big in the wrong places. You know, I just, like I said, I didn't know what I was buying, so I was just buying boards that was just easily, you know, and readily available to me.
So then, so you, okay, yeah, and that's right. So you're riding these big kind of clunky 80s boards, but then, you know, there was that transition towards kind of your more super high refined, you know, Kelly Slater elf shoes, you know. And what was that like for you, going from, you know, those 80s boards to super rockered out boards?
Yeah,
Like,
it was. They're so deceptive in that they're almost like bait and switch, right? What I remember is I used to ride, you know, and I weighed 125 pounds at the time. I was riding 6 foot boards, 19 inches wide, right? And those were the custom shapes I was getting from Stewart. I'd order them, and you know, they generally worked and worked well. And then Kelly came along, and he was riding these potato chip, really long. So I forget how long I went, but I remember going as narrow as 17 and three quarters. Yeah, it was pretty
wow.
bad, and they were pretty knifed out. And but the problem was, is if you had a decent wave and you put your feet in the right places and you were having a good moment,
Yeah.
they it surfed amazing, right? So
Right.
you get kind of captured by that circumstance, and then you're thinking, this is my magic board. But ultimately, what ends up happening is you catch less waves, you're building possibly bad muscle memory. So all those things combined, you end up slowing your progression. And so I remember that from roughly 1993 to about 98, my surfing was very stunted, and I just got worse and worse and worse. And I think my technique kind of fell apart. And yeah, it was a bad period. And I would say that's probably my biggest plateau, is that, you know, I blame Kelly. But I also blame Kelly for the biggest and the best progression. So it's kind of funny. He was the worst, you know, contributor and the best contributor. So
He's just evening
bizarre.
things out for you. He's just evening things
Yeah.
out for you. Well, do you think that, you know, what you just described there is what causes so many other everyday surfers to plateaus? They jump on too high performance of a board too soon, and then that causes those issues that you just mentioned.
Oh, absolutely. They and I get these, you know, ever since I started this channel, I get those questions a lot. The number one question is either what kind of board I should get, or, you know, choosing between boards, or, you know, proper sizing of boards. That's always a concern, and it's still a challenge for me. You know, a board comes out, like, you know, they release the Great White by Firewire, you know, and you're trying to like figure out exactly what board, because they're, you know, pricey, right? All surfboards are expensive, especially with recent inflation. So it's that decision-making process is difficult. So what I try to tell people is, ultimately, you know, if you're, especially if you're in the beginner to, you know, mid intermediate, the most important thing is getting on more waves. That is the most important thing. So yeah, even if you have a bigger board and you hopped on your friend's little board and it felt better for that one wave, the problem is you're going to catch less waves. You're going to, you know, it's just ultimately going to slow your progression down. So
Yeah. Well, I think that's what's so interesting about seeing your surfing, because you know, you obviously surf at a very high level, but you surf these very average waves. And you know, in I remember when I first started watching your stuff, you were always on these like tiny, stubby little grovelers, you know, and you look like you're having so much fun. And it's like, I'm sure, and you know, more recently you've been riding more high performance boards in the same waves and surfing just fine, but at the same time you chose to ride those grovelers instead. So, you know, I mean, so what's your opinion? Like, how should, well, what do you ride nowadays? What, I guess you have the channel, so you're constantly trying new boards.
Yeah,
But
it's challenging.
if you didn't have the channel, you know, and it's your 2 to 3 foot, even sometimes 1 to 2 foot day, what do you break out? What's your favorite board for tiny waves?
Oh, that's such a good question. It's such a difficult one. And you know, it's only my exposure to certain boards. I mean, if you put every board under my foot, I might have a different opinion. But just from the ones I've ridden, my two favorite boards, if I didn't have this channel, are right behind me, actually. So you got the Firewire Mashup, right? And then you have the SharkBite FT. So one's kind of performance. The other one is more performance grovel, right? And so if I could have it my way, like I would love the FT in two or three different sizes just for different types of waves. And then the Mashup in two or three different sizes. So if it got smaller, I could take out something that would work better that day. But in terms of overall like performance to grovel balance, I find that these two boards are just super amazing. They're my favorite. So that's what I would stick with. But, you know, and I put these three boards behind me because they're right now currently my favorite, right? And I got the Helm Mini Simmons, which I love. Because once it gets super soft in like a foot, that'll still go. And I don't have to try as hard. So it just all depends on, you know, and this is the problem. I think when most people ask me, it's a very narrow question. It's, you know, should I get this, you know, between two sizes, a smaller one or a bigger one? Well, there's no other factors that they're providing me. So a lot of times it goes from a question to this long drawn out conversation where I need to know, you know, what's your skill level? What kind of waves are you riding? You know, what are your average age? And ultimately, what are your goals, right? Is it to get better? Is it try to learn a particular maneuver? So the questions are very nuanced, or the answers are very nuanced. And so it's turned into a long conversation. But ultimately, these two are my favorite at the moment. But ironically, I haven't ridden my Mashup in a year, right? Because of the channel. It's just I'm trying trying new boards. I want to put out new content. I want to see what people, you know, I want to provide what people want to watch, ultimately.
Hey, everyone, it's Van. Hopefully, you've been enjoying the podcast. Hopefully, you've been listening to some good stories, getting some good tips that are helping you improve as a surfer. If so, make sure to subscribe to the podcast, leave us a review, it'll only take you literally a few seconds, and share it with your friends. That's the best way you can support me so I can continue to create awesome new content for you. So thanks.
Right.
So. Well, that's super fascinating. And I want to get into the why behind all three of that. So we're going to come back to that. But okay. I kind of want to go back to like what drew you to writing, you know, a baked potato in the beginning. Cause I remember you actually talking about how there were a couple boards that made like the biggest impact on your surfing. You were like, right. These boards really changed my life. And I think you had mentioned like the baked potato was one of them. So like what drew you, and you used to do tons of content around the baked potato. And so that's why I'm actually really curious now that the baked potato is not behind you and you got that Mini Simmons there.
Yeah.
But just starting with the baked potato, I mean, what did that unlock for you?
Well, I would have to actually step back a little bit further than that because, you know, up until the Dominator, I never thought about boards in any other way than, you know, especially like volume, right? I had no idea. I would just go and pick the size I thought would work for me. Yeah. And a lot of times they would ultimately hurt my progression, right? Because I was catching less waves or they just didn't work right. So I bought a 5.6 Dominator and rode it and I liked it. But I remember buying my brother a 5.8 Dominator and he liked it because he was a little bit bigger and heavier than I was. One day I go to ride his and it rode 10 times better than the 5.6. So I was kind of surprised because not only is the 5.8 31 liters, which is way above my liter range, it's a lot bigger, wider. And I didn't know why, but I just basically said, I'm going to take your board. So I basically stole the Dominator from him and bought him a 5.10 because he felt it was too small. But that was the key, I think, moment where I started to realize, you know, shape and size and design has a lot to do with, you know, the surfer, right? Never thought about it up until that point. And I didn't know exactly why the Dominator worked. I do now, but back then I didn't. But I knew that, okay, maybe it's the literage. So I stuck around the 29 to 31 liter range. And then when the baked potato came out, I bought the 5.1, which was 29 liters, because the next size up just seemed a little too big and too wide. And I didn't think it was going to work, to be honest. But it was one of my favorite boards. And like you're saying, I have a lot of content up. But, you know, when I uploaded all that content, it was mostly just for me. It was like my video backups of myself. And, you know, a lot of my earlier videos didn't have any music or anything because I was just posting it so I can analyze it from somewhere other than my house when I didn't have access to my computer. And so it did The Dominator ultimately changed the way I thought and started put me back on track. And then the Baked Potato, you know, made me analyze, start making me analyze boards by design and why certain things worked for me. And what works for me isn't going to necessarily work for you, right? Because our weight distribution might be different. I'm very heavy front footed, and a lot of people don't understand what that means. But ultimately, I like to, I don't like to, but I pull my maneuvers with my front foot versus push my maneuvers with my back foot. And so certain boards work better for that. And so the Baked Potato at 5'1", which most people that are going to buy that board, they're not going to buy it that short, right? But it just worked like magic. And it just progressed my surfing and got me almost caught up to where I was. And then that's when I started to more or less start picking boards by what I thought was going to work for me versus just kind of randomly choosing, you know, what was popular or what somebody, you know, surfed well on. And then right. The great thing is Noel Salas was a very instrumental person, you know, I guess, example in my life, because I started to figure out right away, I liked all my boards almost one size above what he liked. And I weighed 10 to 20 pounds less than he does, right? Which I found very interesting. It's just my front-footed stance really factors in, and the way a board responds to that, it just happened to be slightly bigger boards with the wide point a little bit more forward for me.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, it's funny because I was literally having this discussion with somebody, one of my buddies, how, because what was it? We had just both watched, there's a group of us, we had both watched the Stab in the Dark episode that Chloe came out.
Yep.
And the past 2 years, it's been the Channel Islands CI Pro that's won. Yep. And then Chloe gets on it and he's like, this is the worst board I've ever ridden, you right. know? And it's so fascinating because it's like, they're all extremely high level surfers, but two can think this is the best board ever. And one thinks it's the worst board ever, which just shows how subjective it is. Right. Yep. So, you know, and we were talking about how, well, is it even useful to watch board reviews? Because, you know, I can surf totally different from this person. I mean, their recommendation may not make any sense for me. And then this is the conclusion that we came to. It's like this vague triangulation that's occurring. Like you try one board by that one reviewer, and then if you like it and you click with it, then you know that you have a similar style to that reviewer, and then you know generally that it might work for you, you know?
Right.
And so it's this interesting thing, but I think that is something important to know. And it's kind of like what you were talking about, how subjective this all is. What's interesting to me, what you said though, as well, is you ride more volume than Noel. But I do feel like that probably also has something to do with the waves, right? I mean, he's surfing right. like these really nice points that are generally going to be decent size, whereas you're riding much smaller waves most of the time. But I think what was interesting is you mentioned how you went from the 5'6 Dominator to the 5'8, and that bump in volume really, really enhanced the surfing. But I do also remember seeing footage of you on like a 5'4 Baked Potato and then on a 5'2 or 5'1 Baked Potato. And the difference in your performance between the two was like night and day.
Right.
You were surfing so much better on the smaller version than on the bigger version. So it's interesting, you know, what's your view on volume? I mean, it sounds like, I mean, I think I know the answer, but you know, there's going to be this sweet spot in terms of volume, right? There's going to be a certain point if it's too low, it's going to hold you back. But there's also going to be this point where it's too high, and then that's going to hold you back as well. You want to kind of be in that Goldilocks zone. So how do you think about that?
Yeah, that part is also very specific to a surfer's, I guess, skill level, right? So if you take someone like a pro, I remember I used to laugh because a pro would like be marketing a groveler, and it's literally an eighth of an inch wider. You know, barely, you know, a half an inch shorter, a little bit thicker. And I'm thinking, that's a groveler? Like, to us, it would be really high performance board still, right? The FT technically is considered a groveler for a pro. So it's like, I think based on your skill level, that golden zone is, you know, is going to change, right? So mine might be around 3 liters, right? Someone that's a beginner, it's going to be maybe 10 liters. Like they can, they wouldn't feel the difference whether it changed 4 or 5 liters, because if you're a beginner, obviously it's, you know, you're at a point where you're not really paying attention to the board, really. You're just kind of paying attention to yourself. So that's my take. If I were to surf at my weight, right, which is about 140 now, I'd be probably on like a 23 to 24 liter board, right? If I were to measure myself up to some, you know, professionals, you know, weight and standard, I'd be at about 23 to 24 liters. But the issue, like you're saying, is I do surf a softer wave. But even on a bigger, better wave, like, I don't know if I have the skills to push around a small board like that. So, you know, a lot of it is, you know, when you watch someone like a Philippe Toledo, you know, even at lowers, we don't visually see it because it's hard to kind of pick up. But when you're watching him just do a pump, the amount of pressure he's putting on that back foot to drive off the fin and rail is probably 20 times more than mine. So it's like, I'll never get that performance. So the only way I can do it is having the board help with it. But then it does go into what you're saying. It starts to like have diminishing return. Once I go too far, it goes the other way. And again, it's just, it's all subjective. And two, it's funny because a lot of times the way you feel when you're surfing is so different from the way you look, right? And I think Noel said it, and I think other surfers have said it. And one thing I learned by having a camera and always recording my sessions, and ultimately it was just to get better, right? Is that everything is half as good, half as big, half as everything I thought it was, right? I think, oh, I got such a good slap on that. And, you know, I probably put up 10 foot of spray and it's like literally a 5 foot spray. Or I thought the wave was double overhead and it's shoulder high. This is bizarre. Like, you know, your mentality for surfing, and I find that surfers do this more often than any other sport, is that your perception is so skewed, and I don't know why that is. So it just factors into how it makes surfing such a difficult sport to actually improve on. So
totally. So I'm curious, what leaders, you know, if you're, let's say you're surfing like lowers and it's like a decent day, like head high, a little overhead, what leaders would you ride?
25.5, that FT right there. Yeah. Okay. That's lowers. That's like, yeah, all day. That board is just, it's, and I said it in my video, it's like probably the most surprising, because it looks like a super high performance board, but it's a great gravel board. So
yeah.
Yeah. I think 25.5 is probably where I'd want to be. Again, I think I'm usually at or one size above Noel Salas. It's just, I'm not sure why it works out that way. So yeah.
No, that's interesting. Yeah, I mean, I have an FT. Well, I don't have an FT. I have an Inferno, and it's definitely one of my favorite boards. And I'm about 140, 145. I'll fluctuate, and I ride around, yeah, 25.5. My Inferno is like 25.6, and then okay, up to like 26 liters for like my I guess my equivalent of the mashup. Although it doesn't grovel quite as well, but my step down below that is the Rocket Wide, and I'm kind of obsessed with that thing as well.
Oh, really?
But let's actually, you know, and just one more thing I just want to add, because I think that this is something everybody should watch. You know, just because we're talking about the change in volume, I was talking about that difference from you on that 5.4 versus the 5.2. There's this other clip that you posted as well. You're surfing like a 6.8, and then you surf a 6.0, and then you surf a 5.6. And
oh, like, yeah,
that is just like night and day difference as well.
Yeah.
So I think it's, yeah. Go ahead.
I was gonna say the those were all Sundays, 5.6 Sunday, 6.0 Sunday, and a 6.8 Sunday. So,
yeah, and I think it's just something important for people to understand, right? Like, you know, I'm a huge advocate of people should ride more volume, because I think most people make the mistake of riding too low a volume. But once you get to a certain level, sizing down in your volume is going to have a huge impact on your surfing, right? And then, but seeing that footage of you just, same surfer, extremely highly skilled surfer, and then the difference, I think that just totally, completely illustrates it. So that's what's so interesting. So let's dive in now a little bit to kind of your current quiver. Let's start at the very bottom end. So it sounds like your favorite groveler is no longer the baked potato, but it's that Mini Simmons. Like, tell us about this board. Yeah,
I have never clicked with a Mini Simmons before. I've actually tried like three. But I think the reason I like this, because one, it's 5.2. It's a soft top, but it's also 38 liters. So when it's knee high and below, nothing, you know, nothing beats it. It's just so much fun. But you know, how often, like luckily in California, it's rarely that small consistently. So I probably take it out maybe once every other month. But yeah, it's a super fun board.
Okay. So what do you ride in kind of baked potato conditions now? Is that the mashup what you ride or?
Yeah, I could probably do the mashup or the Seaside. I did try the Bobby Quad, which I loved. That thing worked great in small conditions as well. It had to be a little cupped. It couldn't be super soft, but that board, super maneuverable. So between the mashup and let's say the Bobby Quad, I'd pick either of those. I don't own a Bobby Quad, so obviously I have the mashup. But yeah, those two right there, it's probably that range of boards.
So what makes the mashup so special to you? And it's interesting because the mashup is a very different design from the baked potato. I mean, it's not very wide, right? So,
It's not as wide, yeah.
yeah.
You know what? I wouldn't say they're too different, only because you know you're sticking a little pointy nose. If you remember, the baked potato was very kind of a stout board with a somewhat of a diamond tail, and they don't make that board anymore, which is very sad. That was a very fun board, and I think it was just the right size. It was 5'1" at 29 liters, which for the height, the width, everything just worked. So if I were to stretch that board out and start putting rocker and making it look like a normal board, it'd probably be like surfing like a 5'8" without the swing weight. So that's ultimately what it was. It was just lobbing off the tail, lobbing off the nose, and just surfing a bigger board in a smaller package. So
But
that's why I like it.
isn't the mashup pretty narrow? But it just
No,
has a
it's
real
not as.
flat rocker?
Yeah, it's
No?
not. I mean, it's definitely narrower than the baked potato, but it's a very flat rocker. So kind of the same principles. Both are, you know, sort of Dan Man, right? So, yeah, I would say they're more similar than people would think, right? I think that flat tail rocker helps a lot, and it's still somewhat wide. It's just they just stretched it out is basically all they really did. So I think the 5'4" is what I like to ride. I think that's like 27.2 liters if I'm remembering correctly. So it's 2 liters less. So it does give you a little bit more agility. So once you develop the skill, you know, to your point earlier, going down in volume does help when you want, you know, more, I guess, more performance. You know, provided you have built the proper technique and skills, it will help.
Right. Do you think that that might be part of the reason why you've kind of switched away from the potato and towards the mashup? Do you think you've just gotten better at surfing and that's kind of why you gravitated? Or is it more just you found a better fit, like after, testing a million boards, you're like, this is the better board for me?
Well, I'm gonna be
'Cause
honest.
I
If they
go ahead.
built a 5'1", the same baked potato in helium right now, I'd probably buy that. You
Yeah.
know, if you told me to
Interesting.
choose, that'd be tough. Because I have the FT, I might forego the mashup, just because the baked potato could fill that spot a little bit better. You know,
Yeah,
and they don't make that
got
board anymore, so it's luckily it's a moot point, right?
it.
So.
And then the newer boards don't do it for you. The like the sweet potato and all those guys.
The
'Cause they
sweet
have
potato is
the
fantastic, but it's too big. The shortest one they make is a 5'2". So in order to get it in my leader range that I would probably enjoy the performance, I could pull more performance out of that board would be probably 5'0", which would be then, I don't know, I think that's kind of going too small, right? So 5'1", 5'2" is probably where I want to be, but just a little bit less leaders, a little bit less width. So yeah.
And so what do you so talking about the FT now, what do you love about it? And it's interesting because when I ordered mine, I talked to them and they I was trying to decide between the regular Inferno 72 and then the FT. And the guy at at SharpEye was like, pretty much unless you're Philippe Toledo, you should probably go with the thruster. Because the quad has so much drive that it's hard to, like, for a normal human being to do turns on it. But you seem like you're having a grand old time. And that's why ended up getting a regular 72. But what's your opinion on, like, quad versus thruster for the FT?
I'm not really a thruster guy. You know, I did it my whole life up until I got to probably the baked potato, right? So even on the Dominators, I was riding them mostly as a thruster. I started to dabble on the Dominator as a quad, and I found out that for my style of surfing, just quad and 2+1s work best, right? So when I got the FT, and I was very interested in the 72, it won one of the Stab in the Darks, I believe, right? And Kale, I think it was Kale Brock that surfed it. Really interested in it, but what steered me away is that I had the mashup first, and it was a swallowtail. So I kind of wanted to stay with the swallowtail. And that's another thing. Like, I would tell people to experiment if they can. I know it's expensive, but experiment if you can, because I avoided swallowtails my entire life. I don't know why. Maybe my friends, I just got it in my head that, that's just gimmicky or whatever. But turns out that out of all the boards I surf, swallowtails work the best for me, right? So, yeah, I don't know. I wish I had gotten on them way sooner, So
Interesting. Huh. Okay.
that
So
was the
just
main decision with that tail.
really, yeah, it's the swallowtail. That's what did it for you. Interesting. Yeah, I remember listening also to a it was a podcast with Marcio, the shaper of Sharp Eye, and he talked about how his favorite board was a 72 and not the FT as well. And I figured he's going to be more of like a normal average human being than like Philippe Toledo. And he talked about how with the thruster, you're going to get this projection from your bottom turn. And then the way that you don't get with the quad, but then what they did with the FT in order to get that projection was using Dark Arts technology. And that's what gives it that projection, that pop, right? And that's something I think that you talked about in your review that that's something a really distinct characteristic of that board that you liked, right?
Yeah, I do love the dark arts, but I mean, in all honesty, because I haven't ridden the PU, I don't know, how much of it is the design of the board versus how much of it is dark arts, right? But I have talked to a friend who owns both, and he says it's night and day dark arts in that particular board. So, based on his perception of it, I'm gonna have to believe that Dark Arts does factor in at least the carbon. So I know that Sharp Eye looks like they have their own carbon called C1 now, which I'm super interested to try because I want to kind of compare the differences. But I also want to go back on. I want to try the PU just to see what the differences are, right? So hopefully someday I'll get on all three and I can, give an evaluation of it. But at the moment, that's what I own, and until that thing breaks in half, it's what I got. So.
Well, probably not going to break anytime soon. The good thing about those things is they look pretty bomber, which is pretty awesome.
Yeah, they're durable.
Awesome. So you're constantly, testing new boards. I asked this question or Noel, I don't remember if I asked it or he brought it up. Well, but we discussed this with Noel, so I'm curious about your opinion is for the everyday surfer, do you think it's a good idea to be constantly switching boards? Like, what's your opinion? Like, how should you be constantly experimenting, or should you stick with one board? What's your opinion on all that?
Yeah, that's a tough one. I would say, and just from my experience, and obviously my constraints were financial, right? You buy a board and you're kind of stuck on it all through high school, college. I didn't have the money to go just try different boards. But I would say that, if a board doesn't feel right, and at the beginning stages, it's hard to know if it does or not because, you think it's you. But try to get on demo days, whatever you can, to just try different boards. Because definitely, if you get on one and it feels right away, stick to it and then progress on that board. Because, obviously, there's some characteristic about it that actually works for that surfer. Definitely, I had a board once that it was the worst board I ever owned, and I'm not going to mention what it was. But I stayed on it because financially that's all I had, and I couldn't afford another board. And I stayed on it for like 3 years. And it probably is the single board that destroyed my surfing and my progression. And luckily the Dominator brought me out of that and back into, where I was. But yeah, it was pretty rough. And I can say one thing. I don't know if it was the board design or the construction, but it was a tough light board. And I wanted it because I wanted it to last. Because I didn't want to keep buying boards because I had broken like three, four boards. So I bought it and it was just the worst decision I ever made. And I was stuck on it for years. So,
Wow. Is this on par in terms of damage to your surfing as we were talking earlier about Kelly Slater's, how Kelly Slater's boards like ruined your surfing? Or
yeah, I think so. I mean, in different ways, right? I think
right.
Kelly's boards, yeah, maybe I have to step back because I don't remember exactly what I said about him or his boards.
Well, we were talking about how just how he pushed surfboards to those L slipper, like you were riding 17 and a half inches width or something like that, you know? Yeah.
I know it definitely slowed my progression, right? I don't know if it hurt it because on those boards, like I mentioned earlier, you have these moments of greatness, right?
Yeah.
But with that bad board that I had, it literally just changed the way I surf. And that was bad, right? How I held arm and balance and maybe my weight distribution. Maybe that's because I look at my old foot. I have two clips of me when I was like 19 years old and I was way more back footed. Now, all of a sudden, you know, after that board, I'm super heavy front footed. So things like that.
So do you consider it a bad thing that you're front footed or is that?
I think if I was in the 80s, it would be a good thing. I don't know. I think it is a bad thing. It's, you definitely want to be neutral in certain places. And I guess maybe the best way to put it is you have to be adaptive, right? There are certain parts that front-footed works really well, like driving down the line. So if you're pumping down the line and trying to gain speed, you're very front-footed. But when you're pivoting to turn, cutbacks, that kind of stuff, you got to get pretty on your back foot, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah, it's interesting. I feel like it is a debate. You know, I've talked to surf coaches who are like, oh, it's all the front foot. And then I talked to other surf coaches and they're like, oh, it's all the back foot. And it's, I mean, I think it's both. I think that's the true answer, but it has to
be a balance and you have to know when to switch off, but it's also understanding what that really means. Like, you know, I'm so front footed that I've had situations where even on a performance board, I'll be in a certain part of a wave and I'll see my nose get buried. That's how front footed I am. And I think, when you say you're back-footed, people think that you're not applying any weight on your front foot, but the way your front foot acts is it's like like a pivot point. Like it has to be rock solid. It can't, you know, well, what you're basically doing is turning your back foot around that front foot. Okay. So you definitely still have weight on your front foot because if it's rock solid, obviously it's, you know, it has to hold weight, but I guess consciously when you're thinking about it, you're pushing your back foot through, but it's ultimately you're just trying to maintain that position of your front foot. So it's a really hard thing to analyze, to change, you know, and it's really hard to explain to someone that wants to get to that next level. So,
yeah, totally. I mean, I think something that you've mentioned as well is that you built a lot of bad habits and you spent so much time undoing it. I mean, I'm guessing that's where, you know, having the solo shot and getting your footage, that's where it all came out to be. But like, could you talk a little bit, elaborate a little bit on that process? Like, what was that like for you kind of like unbreaking these old bad habits?
Yeah, it's so hard. But it does. So having footage of yourself is so important if you want to progress rapidly, right? Once I built all the bad habits, and if you look at my earlier footage, more or less, I took a really old, cheap video camera and just pointed it in one direction. It wasn't tracking me, it just pointed it. And then it would, I would surf in front of it as much as I could. So that's how I did it. On occasion, I'd have, you know, my wife film me.
Did she hate your guts?
What's that?
Did she hate your guts and like be pissed off at you for making you film her the whole time?
She's pretty awesome. She supports my habits. So
that's a good thing.
But I mean, the thing is, she hates going to the beach early, so it rarely happens. And that's fair. I'm not going to drag her out of bed for that. But and then there was a period of time, if you look at 2019 through 2020, a lot of footage, or actually 2020, my brother was helping me a lot, right? So he had gotten injured pretty badly at surfing. And so he couldn't do anything other than just sit on the beach and film me. So that's ultimately how this channel got started. But yeah, definitely video is key. And the process was very difficult because I'd have to teach myself little tricks or constantly be aware. One of the things I hated, one of my worst habits, is that my arm goes limp. I don't know why. And when I'm surfing, it seems to just dangle there. And I hated watching that in myself. So to this day, I still have to consciously think about it and think about how I, you know, how your front arm is basically the leverage point of your back leg. So like when you walk, right, it's like a pendulum. It's the counterbalance. So the way I know I'm front-footed ultimately is because my front arm isn't doing anything, right? And that means my back leg isn't doing anything. So I when I focus on my back leg, then I notice that my front arm looks better and everything. So a lot of times style, really, if you focus on style, sometimes it helps your form and vice versa. So
That's so, and that's fascinating as well because I think that, and this is where the subjective aspect of style comes in, right? But if you look at, let's say, Tom Curran or even Parker Coffin has kind of developed his style in this way as well, but his front arm is just super relaxed. Like it's just dangling. It's kind of just dangling there, and it's
yes,
his
it's like,
back
yeah,
arm that's doing
exactly.
most of it. But you're saying like that's something you hate about your style, whereas this is something some people actually aspire to get, So it's this interesting thing. That's where style is subjective, right?
Yeah, it's crazy. I remember Corey Lopez was the same way, And I noticed that it happens more with goofy footers, and I wonder if they're right-handed because I'm right-handed, but I learned from skateboarding from my brother who's actually left-handed, so I ended up being goofy. So now it's the opposite of my strong arm or strong leg, and so I wonder if that has some factor. So I'd be interested to know if Parker Coffin was a right-handed surfing goofy, Corey Lopez, same thing.
Interesting. That's so funny. Well, I mean, you're 52, I think, and you're like doing airs. So, I mean, obviously you're doing something right. What's it like? What's it like learning to do airs at your age? I mean, yeah, tell me about that.
Oh, it's scary. It's scary because the reason I got into surfing too was, my friends and stuff, but I thought it would be a better avenue than skateboarding because I had broken my legs skateboarding. But ironically, I've broken my leg twice surfing. So,
What? How
So
did you break your leg surfing?
I
That's wild.
I had one instance where I think I didn't have enough speed, and that's speed is so important for everything. But I was doing an off the lip, and I got hung up doing kind of an off the lip at the top of the wave, and I stalled, and I basically took a very like a 5-6 foot drop, but my board had turned and my front foot was stuck on it, and so it turned as well, and when I landed, it just snapped. And so that was
Oh my
one instance. The
God.
second one, I don't know what happened. I was just in a barrel. I was trying to get barreled, and all of a sudden, I heard a pop. And next thing I know, I'm just, army crawling 100 yards of low tide beach just to get to this, the dry sand. It was bad. So that one was really bad. I'll have to do a video on that one because I have X-rays. It's pretty gnarly.
Wow, that is gnarly. Oh my God. Ouch.
So
Okay.
from that,
And then,
yeah, from that standpoint, I have a lot of fear built in. And therefore, airs have been a challenge for me, a super big challenge for me. And not only the technique part of it, but just the commitment. It's so hard to like commit to that. So.
Especially with that in your head. I mean, I've had I don't do airs. I don't even go for them, but I've had situations where my board has shot like between my legs and spinned and like, the fins almost, taking out the family jewels, like, and so going into the air on a surfboard like that. So it's inspiring that you're going for it. And, wow. So it just, so how, what's your perspective on surfing at 50? Are you like, you know what, that it's still kind of blue ocean, like I'm getting better. Like, is that your perspective on things?
I think luckily, because the average person, is nowhere near the top of their skill level, it's just the potential is always up. And I think for the next, 10 years, I could still get better. So I'm very hopeful that I'm going to land that air soon. And mind you, I pulled airs, right? It's just I want to pull a reverse. So that's the thing I've been really just trying to get to is trying to get an air reverse. And the issue though is because I'm better in certain areas, like I'm good at getting down the line speed, I noticed that a lot of my airs, my projection's pretty good, but then that adds to that fear element, right? I'm not trying to do like a 5-inch reverse where I get my tail out and nose pick it and turn. What ends up happening is I'm 4 foot in the air and I'm thinking, if I land this, I could break my leg. So my commitment is very lacking. And so one of my really good friends who actually is pretty good at air said, you know, you got to tone it down and just not go for the height. You know, you just do little whitewash, you know, nose picks or something. So
I will get
it though. I'll get it.
Yeah, no, for sure. I'm rooting for you. What's your advice to, because I'm sure there's tons of people in my community that are, you know, they're, you know, in their 50s. Like, what would be your advice to somebody that's getting older, you know, just so they can, yeah, what's your advice to someone that's older and is surfing?
Definitely, you know, there's things outside of the water you can do. I don't do much of it. I'm bad at it. I don't stretch, but obviously that's a good thing, right? I did hit the gym last year. And that helped a lot. Where I think have some weakness is, you know, immediate strength, like getting into, you know, steeper waves, faster waves, getting into waves where I'm, you know, not in the best position, right? So the weightlifting really helped there. And at 50, I think you get a lot of, you know, atrophy and your muscles start to break down. So definitely that really helped. I just hit the gym. And so I'm going to go back at it this year, and hopefully, you know, I could do this for 10 more years. So we'll see.
That's awesome. What kind of exercises in the gym were you doing that you found were helpful?
For paddling, just, you know, straight arm pull downs, work out the lat. And that helped with and I saw a noticeable difference where once I got to the point where I saw my strength going up in the gym, when I was paddling, that one or two extra strokes I was taking, I could feel myself. Normally I would fall out the back, let's say, if it wasn't in the best position, but I would pull myself into the wave, which was awesome. So I thought, okay. Now, unfortunately, my gym closed for like 3-4 months. And so I didn't have access. And that was right before my Nicaragua trip. So I was probably in the worst condition in my Nicaragua trip. So it was, it was bad. Bad timing.
Got it. You don't do anything for your legs. You didn't need to do anything for your legs though?
I should just surf. That is probably the weakest part of my body is that. And I should probably, especially after breaking my legs, my muscles just don't develop there anymore. So it's been really difficult.
Huh. Yeah. And that's kind of amazing. You surf that much and you don't do any like recovery. You don't do any PT. You don't do any prehab. You're just like, your body's just been doing it for so long that it's just... But then I look at Kelly Slater's body and his body's all twisted and gnarled from surfing, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe you're just genetic freak that you're just like everything, every joint is just healthy. Wow, interesting.
Yeah, I just don't think I push myself that hard, you know, luckily. And although I've been hurt a few times, I popped my knee once, but it wasn't to the point where I needed surgery. And maybe I did, I don't know. But it hasn't bothered me. I just try to go surf as much as possible. That's my PT, I guess, you know?
Got it. And what advice would you give to your younger self?
Oh, yeah, don't take the breaks. Right? I don't know why. When you're young, you just don't realize how limited in time you are, but it also how much it affects. You know, it's like that compounding interest, right? You put your money away early, there's dividends payout at the back end. When you don't do that, when you don't make those payments up front, it's much harder to maintain and it's much harder to sustain or progress. So, yeah, I would say put all your time in early while you're young. Just get out there. But it's not to say that, you know, when you get older that you can't progress, right? It's just more difficult.
Right, yeah, right.
Maybe that's totally a bad analogy. I don't know.
No, I think it makes sense. You know what? There was one question that I forgot to ask that I wanted to get into with you. What's your favorite mid-length? You've been riding a bunch of bigger boards. You can obviously rip on smaller boards, but what's your favorite mid-length?
Okay. Their mid-length is such a broad term. That's the problem, I think, right?
Right.
Yeah, mid-length just talks about one thing, which is length, and not all the designs and all the nuances within that category. So, like, I would not put the CI mid and compare it to something like the mid six, right? Two completely different boards. They could be the exact same length, but they're different boards. And so comparing them is hard. At that length though, 6'8", I would probably say, I like the versatility of my Sunday. It's probably one of my funner boards at that length, right? But if I wanted more performance, right, out of something that long, I would probably shift to something like the Harley Ingleby Mo or the Mid Six. And then if I wanted to just cruise and be more classic, you know, it would be the CI Mid. And what I try to tell people is the CI Mid is basically a mid-length that pulls a lot of its characteristics from the longboard side, whereas the Mo and the Mid Six, it pulls all from the performance and modern board side. So it just ultimately depends on what you want to do. But for me, the type of surfing I do, I would probably go right in the middle with something like a Sunday, right, for every day. But then, I don't know. I don't know if you've seen some of the footage of the Mo and Ingleby, but definitely when the minis come out or when they're available to me, I'm going to try those because they intrigue me.
Yeah, yeah. He's definitely ripping on those things. And where do you think the mid-length fits in terms of how people should use them, I guess? Like, I mean, I think it would be different. You know, what kind of advice would you give to somebody? You know, when should you ride a mid-length versus when should you, you know, start trying to ride smaller boards? What's your opinion on that?
That's all subjective. Because I guess it's on mood, right? There are days, you know, I think Rob Machado said something like this: you wake up, you don't feel the same every day, right? One day, you know, you're feeling grumpy, other days you're feeling energetic, you know, and that's ultimately how I feel. And I never go to the beach with just one board. I mean, I can't say never. I have, but I've always regretted it. So I tend to go to the beach with at least two or three boards and try to like spread out the category. So when I get there and depending on the tide, I know what, you know, I want to ride. So softer, bigger, right? Punchier,
yeah.
Something more performance. But then there are days where you want to switch it up because, you know, I took out the Mid Six and I got barreled twice in one day. So I was like, okay, that was a pretty good board to be on. So, yeah, right. It all depends.
Right. So mid-lengths have a place in your quiver and just depends on mood. Cool.
Yeah.
All right. One last question. And that is because earlier in the interview, you said that Kelly Slater had the biggest, worst impact on your surfing. But then you also said that he also had the biggest, like, good impact on your surfing as well. So what's the story behind that?
It's the wizard sleeve. Remember him surfing those real short boards? So he went from kind of these longer boards to these shorter boards. And I think it was him doing that that allowed me at least to have the mind frame to try different things, right? So it put me on to Dominator's the Big Potato. I think that was the big one, right? So yeah, if it weren't for him, I don't think I would have gotten on that short board train, right? Because remember, I mentioned that I rode the 5.6 Dominator, went to the 5.8, and I liked the 5.8 better. So I just thought I liked longer boards. And watching him, yeah, I said, I'm going to go get on that Big Potato, you know. And it might not, you know, the timing might not have coincided, but it was, I always had that in my brain where it's like, okay, I'm going to try different things. Like, I'm going to get on a short board. So technically, yeah, he's probably influenced me more than anybody. So,
yeah, well, he's probably influenced like every surfer, you know, because basically his experiments caused massive changes in what everybody's riding, right?
Yeah, design. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, kind of going back to, you know, something that we had been discussing, you know, that question of like changing boards and should you change boards a lot? My personal view on it is, I think some level of experimentation is good, but you have to recognize with experimentation comes risk, right? So just like what was going on with Kelly, right? Like he's going from these hyper rocker boards that like screwed everybody surfing up, but then he also shifted towards shorter boards, which really helped people. And I guess my opinion on it is if you feel like you're stuck, that's probably when you want to experiment, and that experimentation process might take a while for you to figure out what actually works for you. So maybe you're going to try like a soft top mini season, a Simmons, and then like a Baked Potato, and then you try like a mid length, or you try a bunch of different things. Maybe some click, maybe some work horrible. And then eventually you're like, oh, this one clicks. And then I kind of think you should stick to that for a while, you know, and then hopefully you make some progress and then you can evolve from there. But, I don't know. What do you think about that? Is that a good approach to it, or how would you approach it?
No, absolutely. That's a great approach, right? When you talked about those plateaus, it could be the board, right? It could be whatever's happening in your life, but yeah, try a different board and it revitalizes you, right? Like having had started this channel, like I love that I'm kind of committed now, almost obligated to try different things. So I don't get stuck. And I think I'm at a point where I don't know how much more progression I'm going to have anyways. And it's going to be, if I do, it's going to be marginal. So long as I have my favorites, right? And I get to dabble in other people's experiments, you know, more welcome to it. Like I invite it and it's fun. Ultimately, it's that's what it's about, right? So it's have fun.
Yeah. I don't know. When you land the air, that's going to be some big progression. So.
Yeah, I did make a huge discovery this two sessions ago, right? And I'll have to make another technique video, but I feel like everything I talked about in that first video on how to pull in air is right, but there's some nuances that I wasn't focusing on, and they're pretty important. So I hope to get that video out. And what's funny is I think the video was titled something like 52-year-old learning to air. Well, that was 2 years ago. I'm 54 now, so we'll
Riveting.
see. Yeah,
What an
something like that.
inspiration. Hell yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think that covers everything I set out to cover. Favorite, if you had, well, we'll ask one last question. If you had to surf one wave for the rest of your life, what would that wave be like?
One
It could be
wave.
any wave, it could be some combination of waves that you've surfed in the past. Like what would that favorite wave that you had to surf forever, what would that be like?
I've never surfed it, but I would love for it to be like a small to medium-sized Skeleton Bay. Just be stuck in a barrel for like half an hour. That'd be great. Yeah, that would be it. But
That's a good answer. Who would you bring along? Who would you bring along?
Oh God, you know, I have such good friends, you know, and this is the funny thing about this, having had this channel, you know, some of my more recent friends, my closest friends are from the channel. Like they saw the video, they introduced themselves, and I'm typically a very introverted person, meaning I don't, you know, I don't go out and start talking to strangers. So when they introduce themselves, it's a lot easier for me. And so, yeah, I ended up making some of my closest friends recently, and one of my best friends, you know, he lives out of state, but yeah, I can't answer that one.
That's epic. So you just have a bunch of your buddies. It would just depend, but yeah, you'd have some
Yeah,
friends there. Cool.
I would love for this to go somewhere, you know, and get Waco for a day and just have all my friends there, and that'd be pretty awesome, you know.
Epic. All right. Well, thanks for joining, Tommy. That was a very insightful interview, and yeah, I'm glad you are able to join. Hey everyone, it's Van. Hopefully you've been enjoying the podcast. Hopefully you've been listening to some good stories, getting some good tips that are helping you improve as a surfer. If so, make sure to subscribe to the podcast, leave us a review. It'll only take you literally a few seconds, and share it with your friends. That's the best way you can support me so I can continue to create awesome new content for you. So thanks.